And that is Justin Ruffridge, co-owner of Soldotna Professional Pharmacy. On the show today, we've also got Dr. Kristen Mitchell with Central Peninsula Internal Medicine and Dan Nelson, manager of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Office of Emergency Management. I'm Jenny Nyman. This is the Kenai Conversation on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. If you tuned in after the top of the hour, I'm assuming you've picked up from context clues that we're talking about the COVID vaccine. We've been spending the first part of the show talking about logistics and rollout and ways to get appointments and allocations and all that kind of functional stuff. And I wanted to pivot a little bit, Dr. Mitchell, to you talking about the vaccine itself. You know, there's certainly concern about, is it safe? How long is it effective? If I've had COVID, should I get it? Should I not? That's, you know, that weighing the risks and the benefits and the side effects and all that. I'm hoping you can demystify the vaccine a bit for us.
Sure. I'm happy to give that a try. So that's a big question. I think the overarching message about the vaccine is that there have been more than, I think, 25 million vaccines given so far across the United States. And the experience has been that it is really a very safe vaccine. And so that real world experience has really been a cause of optimism for lots of us who are involved in the vaccine effort. And I think just going back to the emergency authorization of the two mRNA vaccines that we have available, the Pfizer and the Moderna products, there were tens of thousands of people studied in phase 1, 2, and 3 trials. And those folks were very carefully observed for at least 2 months after they got their second dose before the emergency use authorization was granted. So we do have quite a lot of data about safety and effectiveness of these vaccines. I know there are people that I've heard from who wonder about how is it possible that it was done this quickly. And it really has been a dramatically rapid approval process. And I think there are a number of things that go into that. Partly, messenger RNA vaccine technology has been promising for a long time. It's about 30 years of research that I'm aware of looking at messenger RNA technology for cancer vaccines, for other vaccines, Zika and influenza included. And so there's been some ramp up, and this is the first, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, the COVID virus that causes COVID-19, is really the first opportunity for it to be used on a commercial and a population-wide scale, but there's been a lot of science leading up to this. So so the reason that it was so quick was that the federal government guaranteed payment for doses, even if they didn't work. And so the need to do one step and ask for approval and wait to see if approval happened and then design a study and then do a study and then measure the results and then ask for approval to do the next step. That was all compressed into simultaneous phase 1, phase 2, phase 3 safety and efficacy trials so that things were done much more quickly than historically been done. But it doesn't mean that there were corners cut in terms of the thoroughness of the science. And I think that's something that that maybe hasn't been as clearly communicated as it could be to the public. So, so the vaccines really have been thoroughly studied, and they are dramatic in how effective they are. One of the really exciting things about this messenger RNA technology for vaccination is that it works very well in people over age 65. And some earlier vaccine technology, things like the influenza vaccine or some of the pneumonia vaccines that we have for adults, just don't work as well in people whose immune systems are older than 65. The immune system changes with age. And so some of our previous vaccine technology just isn't as effective in reminding the immune system what it needs to do to fight off an invader like a virus. And the messenger RNA technology works really, really well in the older population as well as in the younger population. So 95% effective in preventing illness of COVID-19 in people who have received two doses of vaccine, which is just a stunning success rate for a vaccine. Most vaccines are not close to that effective.
And as you mentioned, so we have a 30-year history of studying these mRNA vaccines, and I'm going to get way out over my skis here and try to wrap my head around exactly how these work and how they differ from other technologies related to vaccines. But this isn't necessarily giving you a low-grade dose of COVID and your immune system gets used to it and can fight it off in the future. This is kind of like a more high-tech approach to getting your body inoculated to this particular virus. Straighten me out, Kristen.
Yes. No, I think you have that right. So I think all vaccines have in common that they are meant to train the immune system to be ready for a real infection. And there's a variety of different ways to do that. There are, I think, 11 different vaccines that are actively being researched, and there's several different platforms. Some other vaccines out there involved killed virus. And so the virus is killed chemically and then injected into the body. Some vaccines have parts of virus that are injected. Some vaccines have just proteins from virus that are synthesized and injected. Some vaccines have live virus that has been changed, so it's not as a dangerous virus, but it still can be contagious from person to person. So there are a lot of different ways that vaccines get developed. The thing that's different about messenger RNA is messenger RNA is something that we all have in our cells, and it's the way that our cells build all the proteins that we need to do the important things in our bodies. And a messenger RNA vaccine synthetically makes a very small piece of messenger RNA, which acts like a blueprint so that our cells can make a protein that looks just like the outside of the COVID-19 virus, or really the SARS-CoV-2 virus is the appropriate scientific name for that. So the messenger RNA vaccine has a little piece of synthetic messenger RNA, and then our bodies, once that's injected, make proteins that look just like the spike protein on the virus, and then the immune system learns that that is a foreign protein, it's not a human protein, and forms antibodies as well as probably some cellular immunity to fight off that spike protein. And I recently heard that that process of fighting it off, where our immune system fights off the spike protein, as kind of having a built-in self-destruct mechanism. It's almost like a Snapchat message that once the immune system sees the spike protein, it goes to work and destroys the spike protein, and it also destroys the cells that are making the spike protein, so it doesn't stick around in the body for a long time. I know some people have been concerned that does the messenger RNA do something to change our cells or our DNA, and it absolutely does not do that. It only acts in the cytoplasm, which is where messenger RNA works. It doesn't get into the nucleus of the cell where our genetic code and our DNA is. So it acts as a blueprint, teaches the body how to fight off this invading virus, and then self-destructs. And the immune cells that have learned how to fight off the spike protein continue to be ready if there is a real infection with the SARS-CoV-2 virus that causes COVID-19, to be able to fight that off and prevent a person from getting sick.
And so when you get the vaccine, some folks are having side effects, flu-like side effects, maybe a rash, maybe just feeling lousy for a bit. So that's your immunoresponse kicking into drive there. And I've heard some concern that COVID is, you know, can be incredibly serious for folks, and especially if someone has a respiratory condition. So the fear that maybe the side effects you would get from a vaccine would be along the lines of what COVID might do to you. So if you have a respiratory emphysema, let's say, maybe you shouldn't get the vaccine because you don't want to have the side effects. Is there any studies related to how serious side effects can be? I mean, certainly there's the allergic reaction that a small amount of people have had, but is there any direction as far as if you have like underlying conditions, maybe don't get the vaccine because the side effects could be bad or not?
So that's a really important question. And really the answer is, if you have an underlying condition that makes you more likely to have a serious reaction to the COVID virus, that's more of a reason to get vaccinated. that it's definitely safer to get vaccinated than to get COVID illness. And so if you have emphysema or diabetes or heart disease or obesity or any of the other conditions that make you more likely to be at risk for severe illness or death from COVID, then getting a vaccine is even more important for you than it is for somebody who doesn't have pre-existing conditions. And the side effects from the vaccine are related to the immune system activating and getting ready to fight off the virus, but they don't involve severe respiratory complications like the COVID illness can have. So they tend to be along the lines of a sore arm. People may have experienced that with a tetanus shot. That's a sort of a similar experience that people will get some soreness at the vaccine site some of the time. Some people may have some aches and sort of, if you've had the flu before, you kind of know how it feels to be achy and sore and tired and maybe even have a low-grade fever. And most of that is coming from the immune system activating to fight off the virus. And so a lot of people will have some symptoms like that, especially after their booster dose. Those symptoms are not of a level of severity that lead people to go to the hospital. The symptoms usually get better with over-the-counter medicines like acetaminophen or Tylenol or ibuprofen, just the ingredient in Advil. And for most people, those side effects are pretty short-lived, on the order of a couple of hours or as long as a day. And again, those side effects are much less severe than what can happen from COVID illness, which can include pneumonia, having to be in the ICU on a ventilator, people die from COVID-19, can include blood clots, heart attacks, strokes. And there's some recent research that new diabetes cases are up a lot in people who have had COVID. We don't understand all the science about how COVID infection could cause diabetes, but there's a strong link that's being investigated right now.
Okay. And another area I wanted to ask you to tackle, and I know this one's a little tougher to pin down, but the efficacy of the vaccine as far as preventing transmission of COVID. So if you're vaccinated, can you still get COVID and not necessarily be symptomatic, but give it to someone else?
So that's a super important question. And there's a lot of active scientific research, but as of yet, we don't have an absolute answer about that. There are some vaccines that don't prevent infection and just prevent illness. And there are other vaccines that prevent infection as well as illness. And I think the hope in the scientific community is that these COVID-19 messenger RNA vaccines will work like the measles vaccine, that they prevent infection as well as preventing illness. But we really don't have enough scientific data to be sure about that yet. So for now, anybody who's been vaccinated still needs to be cautious about social distancing, washing hands, wearing a mask, avoiding crowds. There are cases of people who have been vaccinated who have tested positive for COVID. In all of the research studies, so the tens of thousands of people who were studied, I think out of 43,000 people, there was a single hospitalization for COVID illness. So it's very effective in preventing severe disease. But the original studies weren't designed to swab everybody and see if they might have tested positive for COVID or picked up a COVID infection that they weren't having any symptoms about. So we don't know that for sure. That data is actively being collected and we'll have more information pretty soon. So stay tuned.
And there are other vaccines in the works as well. So maybe there's a new version coming out here in a year or two that perhaps would be more effective at that. We just don't know yet. And of course, yes, to complicate all of this, the virus itself is changing and throwing new curveballs. There's been some variants discovered various places in the world. Is there much research so far that's definitive as far as these two, Moderna and Pfizer, how effective they are with the new strains of COVID that are cropping up?
So the Moderna and Pfizer trials really were performed before the new variants were identified and well known. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine was studied in South Africa as well as in other parts of the world, and probably that's the one we have the best information about with the new variants. We're still learning a lot about variants. The one that has been more common in the UK, the B.1.1.7 virus, is about 50% more transmissible. So it is a more contagious virus. It may be a little bit more deadly than the variant that has been circulating to date. The variant that the scientists are more concerned about are the mutation that is called the 484 mutation that's been seen in South Africa and Brazil so far. And there have been cases identified in the United States of both of those variants as well. Those are thought to have some resistance to vaccine strains. So the vaccine wouldn't be expected to be 95% effective, but that doesn't mean that it wouldn't work at all. So the vaccine is expected to have some effectiveness against these new variants, but not as good a result. So really right now, if people can get vaccinated, make appointments, get their vaccine, the variants really only can develop in people who are infected with COVID. And so if everybody is vaccinated and protected and nobody's getting COVID, then the variants don't have an opportunity to develop and spread. So this is really a great time to get vaccinated as we're in the time before these variants become the dominant strain in our community. And it's predicted, because of the contagiousness of particularly of what's been called the UK variant, that by March, April, that may be the dominant strain in the United States and in Alaska. And that would predictably result in another really big spike of infections and hospitalization and illness and death. So the hope is that Alaska can continue to be as effective as we have been in getting vaccines to people, and that we won't have that worst case scenario of another really big spike with this more contagious variant.
And of course, another big spike doesn't just affect people's health, it affects the economy and schools and function of pretty much every aspect of society. And you hear the term herd immunity, that's the goal, get enough people inoculated that we're not as susceptible to a huge spike in cases and overtaxing the health system. Have you heard what level of vaccine distribution? Is there a percentage? Is there a number that medical professionals or folks like Dan are hoping to see in a community?
So I actually asked this question of Joe McLaughlin, who is the state's head epidemiologist, last night. So when we were dealing with the original variants and the level of infectiousness that we were getting used to, the idea of herd immunity was about 60% of the population protected by immunization or history of infection would probably be what we were aiming for. With the more contagious variants on the horizon, people are talking more like 75-80% of the population needing to be protected so that those more contagious variants don't continue to drive the pandemic. So that's a pretty high level of vaccination in a community. The good news is that national surveys of folks over 65 are that 87% of seniors are really eager to get vaccinated and get protected. And so if we're able to get 87% of our population protected, we'll be there. We can stop the pandemic. And I think the science behind that is really pretty solid. But it takes all of us stepping up to get vaccinated and help our neighbors get appointments to get vaccinated and get transportation if they need help getting to a vaccine clinic. And in the meantime, because there's not enough vaccine to get everybody vaccinated today, continuing to do what we can to prevent spread, which includes wearing face coverings, washing our hands, staying away from crowds.
Okay, great. Dr. Krista Mitchell with Central Peninsula Internal Medicine. I will let you catch your breath there. We've got about 5 minutes left here in the show, and I wanted to give Justin Ruffridge, co-owner of Soldotna Professional Pharmacy, and Dan Nelson, manager with the Borough's Office of Emergency Management, one more shot to reiterate any messages or address any concerns or questions that they've been hearing. Justin, is there any final thoughts that you want to leave our listeners with today?
Sure. I think the best message I can reiterate to anybody is a message of positivity. We're living in a time that a year ago we didn't see coming, but we've risen to the challenge, particularly as the state of Alaska, and even more particularly as the Central Peninsula. I could not be more proud of the people in our community. Neighbors helping neighbors, providers stepping up, volunteer efforts. We have really seen an effort that is really quite something to behold. And I will say again that the vaccines that have been created here, not only are they effective at prevention of obtaining COVID, but almost 100% effective at prevention of hospitalization and death, which is just it's incredible. And I would ask people to talk to their neighbors, talk to their loved ones, start talking about is this the time to reach out, get a vaccine, and you know, reach out to the pharmacy, to their doctor, to the borough call line. That's the 262-4636 number. And we're incredibly blessed to live here right now. We have access to the things we need to fight back and get back to our way of life. So keep that in mind.
Thank you for that, Justin. And Dan, I will throw it back over to you. Are there any last messages that you want to share with folks? Of course, if you could mention the phone number and the website again, that would be lovely.
Absolutely. Let's remind people the website to sign up for a vaccine, covidvax.alaska.gov. If you have any problems with that or any questions, you can give us a call at 262-4636. And I also want to mention one more website quickly, which is covid19.kpb.us, like Kenai Peninsula Borough, and you're going to see on there some local statistics. But there's also a chance on there if especially any medical providers or any of those folks are interested in helping with this effort, to please fill out the form that's on there and sign up, and we'll be in touch with you. This truly has been a community effort, and you know, the borough is kind of here in a coordination capacity. None of this could have happened without all the healthcare providers and without our neighbors and friends. We started talking about herd immunity with Dr. Mitchell, and I just wanted to mention, to close it out, we have about 50,000 people in the borough if you exclude our youth, so over 18, very rough numbers. As of this morning, we've vaccinated 6,100. So we talk about that herd immunity. We are just at that 10% mark, and I know that as we continue, we are going to increase that and get those numbers to where we need to be. It is going to be a bit of a process. So we thank everybody for participating and doing everything to help our neighbors and friends get vaccinated.
All right. Well, we will have to leave it there. We're coming up on the top of the hour. This has been the Kenai Conversation on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman, and a huge thank you to Dan Nelson, Dr. Kristen Mitchell, and Justin Ruffridge for sharing information today. Thanks for tuning in.